Louisa May Alcott wrote her novel Little Women based on the recollections of her own childhood. It describes the life of a fictional New England Unitarian minister's family of four sisters. The story takes place in Concord, Massachusetts during the American Civil War. The minister father in the story is away. He's serving as a chaplain in the Union Army. The story has been made into a 1958 TV series. It's been made into multiple Broadway plays. It's been made into a musical, a ballet, and even an opera. Hollywood has made this story about a Unitarian minister's family into seven movies. Most famous is a 1933 movie starring Katharine Hepburn, a 1949 movie starring June Allison with Elizabeth Taylor as Amy, and a 1994 movie starring Winona Ryder. So let's watch the opening from the 1994 movie. The setting is the Unitarian minister's parsonage in Concord, Massachusetts. It's Christmas 150 years ago. So Hollywood has changed this quickly into a romance, but the original message the original message of Louisa May Alcott's story was about how these young ladies were unselfish. Unselfish young women who gave away their Christmas breakfast to a needy refugee German family. Now, although this is an autobiographical story, in real life, Louisa May Alcott's family was not actually identical to this wholesome family in the movie. Louisa May was born in 1832. Her father was a teacher named Bronson Alcott. Alcott was always poor or in debt. He was a vegetarian, an abolitionist, and a Unitarian. As a teacher, Mr. Alcott and his Unitarian friends developed some radical ideas about how to raise children. Religious beliefs influenced child-rearing practices. 19th century Unitarians like Bronson Alcott believed that adults should train their child's will, train the will, rather than break the will. In contrast, conservative Protestants believed that babies were born sinners. Babies were willful, selfish, corrupt to the very core. Conservative Christians felt that it was their obligation to break that child's will as early as possible. Conservative Christians taught children about making a make-believe Saint Nicholas, who was determined to figure out whether we were naughty or nice, and carried both punishments and gifts. In parts of the German-speaking world, parents told children stories about a mythical Krampus, a horned Christian demon who punished bad children. He accompanied St. Nicholas on home visits, frightening and threatening the bad children and giving them coal instead of presents. Well, 19th century Unitarians had a much more positive view of human nature. They believed that a child's will, although it might be imperfect, was not corrupt. Unitarians felt that children needed training by their parents so that they would learn to overcome the natural inclination to be selfish. Such training should avoid, the parents should avoid outbursts of rage, outbursts of physical punishment, of spanking from the adults, that needed to be avoided. The Unitarians said such behavior caused children to grow up fearful of adults and fearful of authority. They said we should base child rearing not on fear, but on firm, patient, and imaginative use of moral instruction, accompanied by assurances of parental love. The Unitarian minister Theodore Parker said it this way: men often speak of breaking the will of a child. It seems to me they had better break the neck. The will needs regulation, not destroying. I should as soon think of breaking the legs of a horse in training him as of breaking a child's will. The goal of child rearing was the creation of unselfish children who would joyfully give away their breakfast on Christmas morning. Among some Unitarians, this affirmation of the inherent worth and dignity of every child took a radical form. They argued that the ills of society, the problems we have out in the world, in our cities and our countries, that they're produced by corruption within society itself, and are not the result of a child's natural impulses. Within each child, they said, lie the seeds of perfection. The seeds of perfection, like the unopened buds in a flower. Therefore, adults should encourage, not suppress, the natural impulses of children. Unitarian minister Ralph Waldo Emerson wrote his famous 1836 essay, Nature, and he said, the best people are those who retain the spirit of infancy even in the era of manhood. He said, the wisdom of a man's best hour was no better than the simplicity of his childhood. Emerson summed it up this way: the sun illuminates only the eyes of a man, but it shines into the eye and the heart of a child. Well, following these idealizing of children, Emerson's Unitarian friend, Bronson Acott, opened the Temple School in Boston in 1834. Louisa May Alcott was 2 years old when Temple School was opened. It was called Temple School because it was in the Masonic Temple in downtown Boston. The students in Temple School, the ones who came to take classes from Bronson Alcott, were from the well-to-do Unitarian establishment in the city. He got a young woman as his assistant, a woman named Margaret Fuller, and later Elizabeth Peabody, to serve as assistants in the school teaching. Mr. Alcott, believing in the goodness of the child, opposed whipping as a means of discipline for his students. Instead, he decided that he would offer his own hand for an offending student to strike, saying that any failing of the child was the fault of the teacher. He reasoned that the shame and guilt that the child would feel while whipping his teacher would motivate the child to behave better in the future. Before 1830, all the schools taught writing by expecting children to memorize rules of grammar, to memorize spelling, to memorize vocabulary words, meanings of words, and to practice by rote over and over again penmanship. Mr. Alcott had students write about their personal experiences. He taught classes not by giving lectures, but by holding conversations with the children. He decorated his schoolroom with books, with comfortable furniture, with portraits of Plato, Socrates, and Jesus. Mr. Alcott introduced sex education, which consisted back in the 1830s of a few brief but frank discussions with the children regarding birth and circumcision. Now, outsiders heard about this and called this teaching obscene. In 1839, Mr. Alcott admitted an African-American child as a student. Now, for the white Unitarian families of Boston, this was too much, and they withdrew their children. A lack of students, a lack of tuition, forced Mr. Alcott to close his school. Bronson Alcott, though, moved to Concord, Massachusetts, and continued to apply his approach to child raising to his own four daughters. In 1843, when daughter Louisa May was 11 years old, Mr. Alcott started a utopian community on a 90-acre farm in Massachusetts. He called it Fruitlands, after the 10 old apple trees on the property, and because he believed that the apple was the perfect food. The Alcott family lived on the farm with a half a dozen of Bronson Alcott's friends, all men. Their goal was to regain access to Eden, back to paradise, by finding the correct formula for perfect living, following specific rules that they developed governing agriculture, diet, and reproduction. They agreed to follow a strict vegetarian diet. They banned coffee, tea, alcoholic beverages, milk, because it was an animal product, and they decided that it was wrong to take a bath in warm water. They only bathed in cold water. They only ate what they called aspiring vegetables. Aspiring vegetables are vegetables that grow upward. They refused to eat any vegetables that grew downward, like potatoes, beets, radishes, things that grew in the ground, only things that were up in the air. As vegetarians, they prohibited wearing leather. They also would not wear clothing made of cotton or silk or wool, because these were all the products of slave labor from the American South. Although Bronson Alcott said he believed in women's rights and the equality of women, his wife and his four daughters did most of the farm work. They cooked, cleaned, and even brought in the barley harvest without much help from the men. The men were there to think great thoughts. This utopian community closed after 7 months. Following the closing of Fruitlands, poverty made it necessary for Louisa May to go to work. At an early age, she was 11, 12 years of age, she worked as a domestic helper in other people's homes and as a seamstress doing sewing. During her free time, she worked on her writing. Her first income as a writer came in 1855 when she was 23. She was 36 in 1868 when she finished her novel, Little Women. It was an immediate success, and from the sale of the book, Louisa was able to pay off her family's debts. Little Women was a revolutionary book for her time and for our time, because in its pages, young women read that having ambitions beyond being a wife and a mother, that such ambitions beyond that were normal and healthy. In a culture where adult females are often called girls, the title Little Women was itself a call for respect and equality. Given Louisa May Alcott's success as a writer, one could argue that her life is an affirming testimony to the child-raising philosophy of her Unitarian father. And although he was somewhat eccentric in certain ways, in many ways, our culture has adopted her father's approach to child-raising. In 1954, the Supreme Court issued its landmark Brown versus the Board of Education ruling, which declared that racial segregation in public schools was inherently unequal, affirming Mr. Alcott's decision to admit an African-American child to his school in 1839. In 1970, the Unitarian Universalist Association published its curriculum, About Your Sexuality, a comprehensive sex education course, affirming Mr. Alcott's belief that we should give children instruction in this area. Today, 31 states have banned spanking, banned paddling, banned caning by school teachers, affirming Mr. Alcott's belief that corporal punishment is wrong. As far as I know, no teacher has, however, adopted Mr. Alcott's idea that when the student misbehaves, the student should punish the teacher. Today, in most schools, children are encouraged to learn to write by writing about their personal experiences. Teachers hold conversations with children instead of always lecturing. Teachers decorate their classrooms with colorful pictures and images to enhance the educational experience. All of this affirms the approaches that Brownson Alcott taught in the 1830s. But what about Christmas? The book Little Women opened with that Christmas story. The fictional mother, Miss March, in the book, not in the movie, the fictional mother, Miss March, arrives home in the story from an outing on Christmas morning. And she tells her daughters about a German immigrant family. Not far away from here lies a poor woman with a little newborn baby. Six children are huddled into one bed to keep from freezing, for they have no fire. There is nothing to eat over there, and the oldest boy came to tell me they were suffering hunger in the cold. My girls, will you give them your breakfast as a Christmas present? The four daughters were all unusually hungry, having waited nearly an hour, and for a minute no one spoke. Only a minute, for Joe exclaimed impetuously, I'm so glad you came here before we began breakfast. May I go and help carry the things to the little poor children? Asked Beth eagerly. I shall take the ice cream and the muffins, asked Amy, heroically giving up the articles that she most liked. Meg was already covering the buckwheats and piling the bread into one big plate. I thought you'd do it, said Mrs. March, smiling as if satisfied. You shall all go and help me, and when we come back, we will have bread and milk for breakfast and make it up at dinner time. Louisa May Alcott and other 19th century Unitarians hoped they could use Christmas to teach children to be unselfish. The opening of her book described an ideal 19th century New England Unitarian Christmas. The young woman gave their Christmas breakfast away to the needy immigrant family. The story set a high moral standard for us to live up to. In my own life, over the years, I've given money away to charity. I've volunteered at soup kitchens and at homeless shelters. I've handed out food to street people. I've helped a stranger with a tank of gas or a bag of diapers. And I do this based on the Unitarian Universalist values that I was taught as a child. I try to live my life in moderation. One lesson of Christmas for me has been that things do not bring lasting happiness. Although I try to be careful with the things that I own so that they will last, and that is part of living a life of moderation. Part of my own spiritual discipline is not to attach great emotional importance to things. I do this based on the Unitarian Universalist values that I was taught as a child. These 19th century values still carry a great deal of influence in our larger culture. In 2014, the spring of 2014, a survey was conducted asking people what their favorite books were. Number one, people said, is the Bible. Number two, Gone with the Wind. Number three, the Harry Potter series. Number four, The Lord of the Rings. Number five, To Kill a Mockingbird. Number six, and I don't think most people read this, but they thought they should read it, Moby Dick. Next was Catcher in the Rye. And number eight, Little Women, the story of a Unitarian Universalist minister's family during the Civil War. Number eight on the top 10 list of the favorite books of Americans. And today, Orchard House in Concord, Massachusetts, where Louisa May Alcott lived and wrote the book Little Women, is a historic museum. With my own daughter, I have visited. We stood in Louisa May Alcott's bedroom, and we saw the desk where she wrote the book. Following the example in the novel, during December, I try to enjoy the season without being caught up in the desire to have more stuff. May we be an example to those younger than ourselves, those who are madly rushing around in December, within reason. Let us share our wealth to those who are poorer than us, and then let us calmly open our hearts to the beauty of winter in Florida, to the harvest of oranges, to the beautiful sunsets, to the Christmas lights in our community in the evenings, and to sleeping peacefully in our homes in the dark of a Florida night as we feel the gentle breezes that come from the Gulf.